Hi, it's Dele Alli, and you're listening to Broad and Hotspur.
Broad and Hotspur is an explicit podcast.
That's a good ball played for Huddle. And a beautiful ball by Huddle. Bale, wonderful. A really tremendous goal. And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
It's been against Boys there. Decent cross, and it's in. Jürgen Klinsmann got the touch.
You're listening to Broad and Hotspur, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast that is currently forming a line at the closest bridge. You've got to get behind us before you go over the top. My name is Kevin. Seated with me, as always, the only Kevin friend that I care about, Mr. Kevin Ford. How are you, Kev?
I was doing better until the second half.
Yeah, now I think we can all agree with that one right now. And, of course, seated to his left, the
spokesperson for Tropicana Orange Juice.
Yeah, that's better than what I had. Mr. Jesse Steele, how are you, Jess?
I am right where Jimmy Stewart is pre the visit from the angel in It's a Wonderful Life. So I really need the intervention of Clarence before I find that life is worth it again.
All right, that's fair. I mean, so you need Clarence to jump off the bridge so you can jump off after him.
Do you know me, Bert? Do you know me?
All right, so we are here at Founding Fathers after what a dick punch of a match this was against Southampton. We'll get into the details soon, but first...
Well, I think that's a bit of a joke. We'll delay it as long as possible.
Exactly.
We will cover the news as long as it takes to minimize the time we talk about today.
These are all true things, and thankfully lots of news to occupy us. And the biggest piece of news coming out is... the stadium is finally opening.
Estadio!
I'll believe it when I see it.
All right, this is fair. So, according to the current schedule, either the Brighton or Palace matches upcoming will be the stadium opener. If Brighton wins their cup match, we'll play Palace on April 3rd. And if they lose their cup match, we'll play them on April 6th and Palace at a later date. This is all being done to ensure we get a Premier League match in before our next scheduled Champions League match, which will also be at the new stadium. So it looks like Wembley is finally behind us. I would have felt really good about that 3 weeks ago. Right now, we're in the midst of a losing streak. Our form is terrible. We're in real danger of dropping out of top four at this point, something that if you asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have said was impossible. And now we're going to go into the new stadium and hope that everything just clicks.
Well, maybe it's a catalyst. Get into the new stadium and it's like, boys, just imagine what this is like week in, week out, 62,000. We have to buck our fucking ideas up.
I watched the video, I'm sure everybody else did, of when they were playing the Champions League theme through the new PA system at the stadium. I got really fucking excited, I'll be honest. I was really
Eric
fucking...
Dyer excited? Or...
Yeah, exactly. I was really fired up, but like, it'll be interesting to see what I think after a couple days after this. Like, right now I'm really like pissed off, but I would say I'm leaning a little towards, do we really want to taint our new stadium with this season? Do we really want to touch it with this season at this point? Shouldn't we just roll it over into next year? I don't know.
I think the safe thing, if we'd have won today's game, it'd be a completely different narrative now.
Yes,
that
exactly.
I really truly believe that, and the fact that you both agree with me kind of like just underlines that. Look, you know, we've been crying out for the stadium. I'm sticking to this, I'll believe it when I see it. In my heart of hearts, I believe Millwall will do us a huge solid next weekend and beat Brighton. And then we open against Brighton on April 6th, which, when you think about Chris Hughton leading Brighton out being an ex-Spur, would be a nice, another thing you could throw
sure.
at that.
Right.
All right, if it's Palace, it would be a midweek game, and I get the impression that the authorities, quote-unquote, are reluctant to do it on a weeknight because of the logistics. It's at night, it's later in the day, blah, blah, blah. So let's see what happens next weekend. If Millwall do beat one, which I think they will, because they've beaten Everton, and they are at home, and Millwall have more a game. It's more for a Championship team to get to the semis, it's more money. It helps them gloss over the fact they're hovering just above the drop zone. And then you open against Brighton on a probably a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday afternoon. And the authorities are happy. The only people who are not happy are the television companies in England. So you can almost guarantee that BT and Sky, and then fucking trying to get it either for a 12:30 kickoff or a 5:30 kickoff. But
yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that. I just, you know, it depends how much stock you put in, like, bad juju, right? Like, you know,
right.
Does it matter that we want to come into the new stadium, you know, on a winning streak or whatever? I don't know. I mean, we want to be in our new place. We have built this place for ourselves, and we want to be there, and we want to start winning there. I'm hesitant to make too many prognostications about anything based on today, because right now I feel fucking awful,
right.
And everything I think about Spurs in the future is, like, colored by that. But I will say that yesterday, I was so fucking fired up about this. So, if I go back to
Jess... Sorry, I know your troubles seem so far away.
Exactly. Now it looks as if they're here to stay. But I'll say,
I was a happier year yesterday.
Exactly.
I am the walrus.
Yeah, I am the walrus.
Just don't sing it, lads, because then we got to pay a fucking shit ton of money. We can say it, we just can't sing it.
We can't afford the rights.
We just can't do it.
In fact, we're at risk of being sued by Yoko Ono right now.
That's every week.
Yeah. That's true. Well, she tries to sue us every week.
If it's not her, it's somebody else.
Listen, Yoko, if you're listening, stop suing us, all right? We understand. Love is all you need. I'm excited for the new stadium. It looks amazing. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be great. Also, everything sucks and life is pointless.
I mean, that basically sums up my feelings right now. And Jess,
so that's the podcast right there. Nice. Glory, glory. Sorry, no, we'll talk to you in 3 weeks.
This is really a tale of 24 hours. I was in the same spot Jess was. I was so stoked yesterday when I learned that, you know, the stadium was finally opening. And then now to get this kind of kick in the nuts today.
Yeah.
It really has soured everything. So the test events are scheduled.
It's a bit like getting invited to an orgy and then we tell, I'm sorry, we're full, you have to stand outside.
That's happened to you too?
Yeah.
It's a bit like getting invited to the orgy and then the local Boy Scout troop closes and you're like, what am I supposed to do now? I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, where am I going to buy my popcorn?
Thank you, Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
So the test events are scheduled. We've got an under-18 match on the 24th coming up and a Legends match on the 30th. No announced opponent for the Legends match?
Initially, I'd heard Bayern Munich.
That's what I'd seen for... That was the original plan.
Yeah.
I think it's really funny on test events, like, the stadium's not going to work. Like,
well, that's the other thing as well. Until they go swimmingly.
Yeah.
Because who's to say that something doesn't jump off and they're, oh, sorry, guys. Can't give you a certificate. This didn't work. That didn't work.
Well, you put 30,000 people in there for that Legends match and you find out that somebody forgot to screw in one bolt and the whole West Sand just comes down.
You find out the stadium. They mistook inches for feet on the diagram. The stadium only holds 14 people. It's a real fucking bummer.
But the seats are very spacious.
Yeah, well, they were complaining about not having enough leg room. At the old boy at Heartline.
You know, I think you mentioned last week, this is all stemming from the death of the cheese room. I feel like we've been cursed. This is like the Billy Goat for the Chicago Cubs. This is like the curse of the Bambino. We're dealing with the curse of the cheese room. I think we need to bring it back. We won't play Gouda again until we bring back the cheese room. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
That was almost Kerry Gold.
I'll be here all week drinking the pain away.
Pepper right. Jack.
So
you'd be damned.
Moving on.
Any more cheeses that we can...
moving on from the stadium.
Moving on.
I'm fed up with this.
There you go.
Hey.
This is a monster of a podcast.
Mozzarella. Okay, so the women's national team, the U.S. women's national team, has officially filed another lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation over institutionalized gender discrimination. This is, I believe, the second lawsuit they filed, and this one is superseding the first. Appropriately, it was announced on International Women's Day yesterday.
Timing is everything.
That's right. So the suit alleges that the Soccer Federation pays the men's team more per match, even when the women's team has won World Cups, and has in the past, using the year 2015 for example, earned over $20 million more than the men's team for that same calendar year.
Wow. Yeah, you can see why they've got an extra grind.
I just want to go on record and say I think there should be women allowed every day. I know it's International Women's Day, but I think every day we should have women. So that's really important.
Hot take.
Thanks.
Flaming hot.
Second of all, I saw a stat yesterday. And this is contracted. It's not like it's like secret information. The women are paid $5,000 per match per player when they win. The men are paid $13,000 for the equivalent. Here's the thing. The U.S. Soccer Federation has fucked itself 15 ways to Sunday here. What does it cost to get into a U.S. men's team match now? Yes. Right? It's like $125 for the cheap seats to get in and see this match versus you can go see this women's, and they're selling out stadiums. And here's the thing. They're winning. We're talking about the number one in the world ranked World Cup winning U.S. women's national team. No one is asking for special treatment here. They're asking for equal treatment.
Yeah.
Right? They're asking for what is fair when they bring in so much more revenue than the men.
Yeah.
That is not true in almost any other country. It's true here because our women's team has been so much more successful than our men's team. And here's the thing. It's not like they're just winning and no one's going to see them. People are excited and they're going to the matches and they're paying for tickets. Pay these fucking women. One more thing to say. Sorry. One more thing to say, it matters so much more to the women because they are not being paid as much by their clubs as the guys are. So that $13,000, if you're paying the equivalent, represents 10% of the annual income of these people as opposed to like 2% for the men, minimum salary for MLS, right, which is whatever it is, like $130. So it is fucked every single way. And it doesn't make any sense. And how the U.S. Soccer Federation has not gotten wise to this yet, after they gave them 3 years to get right with it, it's awful.
And the problem here is they're looking for equality. They should be looking for equity here, because this is a case where, you know, paying them $13,000 per win while you're paying the men $13,000 per win is equal. But it's not equitable because they're still making more money for the federation than the men's team is. And given one of the things that's mentioned in the suit is that, you know, their coaching isn't as good as the men's side. Their training facilities aren't as good as the men's side. Their healthcare is not as good as the men's side. But it's the money they're bringing in that's paying for the men's side to get these increases.
Facilities is a huge complaint. Sorry, I cut you off.
That's right.
But if you look at some of the
driving.
If you look at some of the facilities they've both had to train and play in for the women's national team, it's ridiculous. Like, they were playing on... It's shit.
Yeah. Well, I know in women's tennis, they were... One of the big arguments at the Grand Slams was women felt that there was a huge disparity in what the winner at Wimbledon or any of the Grand Slams got compared to the men. And the men's argument was... And this is not the men players, this is the... dovering old white guys who run these governing bodies. Well, they're only playing the best of five. The men are playing best of five, women are playing best of three. You're still out there.
Right.
So why shouldn't they earn exactly what the men are? And I think at the Slams now, they've kind of... I'm not sure if they're on... But whatever Roger Federer wins, then so does Serena Williams win. So what if they're only playing three sets as opposed to five? They're still fucking playing.
And you know, the Soccer Federation, their answer to this so far has been coming down on the facts of the collective bargaining agreement. And these payouts are results of a collective bargaining agreement that the Women's Association signed, and the Men's Association is covered under a different one. And while that's true, you've got to look at who had the power in those negotiations. And the power is held by the Federation, and they twisted the arm of the women to pay them that way as opposed to the men being paid the other way. You know, when you look at other countries and their national teams, we talked about this during the World Cup this year, where I think Kylian Mbappe was pledging every game check from the World Cup to a school or something he was building. And the English players famously never take paydays for, you know, for World Cup matches. But over here, we've got this men's team who isn't good. I mean, they're okay, but they're not good. They're taking just as much money per match as Harry Kane's making.
Yeah.
I think there are three really important factors at play here, and I've been thinking about them, and I guarantee you I will forget the third by the time I get through the first
That's
two.
Fine.
So we'll just see what happens. But
what were you drinking today? What's
Tropicana orange juice. Tropicana orange juice, a.k.a. 2SP the beer, which is different than the beer I've been drinking all season, but it's happening. I don't know. But no, okay. Factor one, the fact that specifically to the U.S. Soccer Federation, these players are not the multimillionaires that they are for other soccer federations.
Right.
So if you, let's say you play for the French national team, you play in France, Italy, England, or Spain, right? Odds are. And you make millions of dollars per year.
Right.
So your fee that you take as playing for the national team is so nominal that it doesn't matter to give it up.
Right.
Let's say the French Soccer Federation pays, and I don't know, I'm going to throw it out there. Let's say they pay 13,000 euros per one match, okay? If it's equivalent to us or whatever. That's nothing to you.
Sure.
When you make a couple million a year. So it's really easy to give it up. So for the U.S. specifically, what they pay to national team players is a bigger deal.
Right.
Because these players are not millionaires going in. That is especially true of the women's game, right? Where the women's game in terms of the leagues is not nearly as profitable, right? And so these players are not making as much week to week, day to day. And so that fucking $5,000 they make, that matters. That's somebody's... We're so used to not talking about that because, you know, we're talking about... when we talk about difference in wages, we're talking about difference in tens of millions. When we're talking about women's players' wages, we're talking about supporting a family. I mean, we're talking about workers here now, right? We're having real conversations about, like...
That $5,000 is somebody's mortgage payment for a month.
We're talking about players who make $90,000 a year, which, agreed, is nothing to sneeze at, but... when you start taking money out of people's pockets, that's like that starts impacting like what kind of housing you can afford. Like it's real. We're talking about real money, not like rich people money.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, you just
forgot the third thing.
Yes.
I don't think you got the second thing.
I think that was the second.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, you just feel that the U.S. Soccer Federation is always backing MLS. You never really get the impression they back women's soccer in this country, which is maybe one of the reasons why the women's leagues keep folding.
Well, which is the other interesting thing. So, I didn't realize this. The Soccer Federation runs the NWSL.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so in the story I was reading...
Not running it terribly well.
Exactly. And in the story I was reading, that's another defense they're using is, well, we're paying your club team salary in the NWSL, so we shouldn't have to pay you for national games. This is all a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all a mess, and it's embarrassing, really.
And let's not lose sight of the fact that, you know, come the summer, it's the Women's World Cup, and you don't want to go into the tournament whether you're the defending champions or not. With all this, you know, you want to be focused on the game, not this. But I understand that they have to take a stand.
It's also worth saying there are very few places where the U.S. leads the world in terms, in terms of the soccer world.
Yeah.
The women's team is literally the platform upon which the entire women's international game has been built. England, Japan, France, Brazil. None of these teams were anything until the U.S. showed that women's sports could be serious, could be competitive, and could be high quality, and demonstrated to the rest of the world what it would look like to have a well-funded women's sports program. Watch Women's World Cup this year. I guarantee you, especially if you watch like the top 16, top 8 teams, you will not notice a difference in quality. You know, these are incredible players, incredible athletes, and it's an incredible game. And it's a really sad thing that the U.S. Soccer Federation doesn't recognize on which side's butter is bread.
Yeah.
Or it's, Jesus, it's bread is butter.
Yeah, the other one works too. So I'm going to pose one last question to both of you on this, and it's this simple. If you're in the shoes of Alex Morgan or...
I don't think I can fit in those heels, but I'll get it. For the podcast, I'll do it.
Or Julie Ertz or Carly Lloyd. Women's World Cup is coming up. This hasn't been... Let's say this isn't settled at that point. You consider sitting it out?
No way.
No.
They've got...
That's the only way to make your point, though.
But they've got too much to prove. These other teams have been coming up against them, and they are... Everyone's doubting, does the U.S. national team still deserve its number one international ranking? They have so much to prove right now, and
yeah.
Especially after the way this She Believes Cup is going, where they've had two in a row, two matches, not looking dominant, like really looking like they're just hanging on. I think they've got something to prove, and they're going to go out and win no matter what. They're professionals.
Well, what better way to force your argument home, win the cup, and say, look, this is why you should be paying us, because we're the best women's team in the world.
But I mean, my counter argument would be they've already done that.
Yeah, but they've done that when this argument didn't have the groundswell that it has now. I mean, I understand your point, and I'm sorry, tanking it and just saying, fuck it, let's get bounced in the group stage, and then
I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying don't show up.
I think you almost have to.
Yeah.
What message are you sending to young girls who look up to them by not showing up?
That's true.
But it's a fine line. Because you're also saying, we need to take a stand to get equality.
Right.
So it's a very fine line.
Also, let's look at it legitimately from the other side. And I know we don't want to spend too much time on this topic, but we also don't want to talk about today's match.
Yeah.
But let's look at it from the other side. The disinterest, disinvestment, and mismanagement of the men's side deserves no reward. Honestly, the U.S. men's side has been so shit. The fact that we did not have a permanent manager, oh, I'm sorry, and then we hired Greg's 13 G's in his name, Berhalter, to be the manager, which I am yet to be impressed by. We'll see. But it's not like what we have done on the men's side has been at all praiseworthy.
Mm-hmm.
The literal only thing that the U.S. Soccer Federation has done that's praiseworthy in the last couple of years is to take seriously investment in youth programs, and they have completely revamped their youth system. But most of that was under the direction of Jurgen Klinsmann, and they finally took his advice, right? As when he was director of football development or whatever his title was.
Right.
So I think on both sides the argument is shitty. On the one hand, the U.S. Soccer Federation has been really unfair to the women who have supported it. On the other hand, it's not as though they've even made up for that by significantly investing in the men's team. Like, it'd be one thing if they said, no, 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 we have this project on the men's side, and you guys are doing so good, you don't need a ton of help, but we really need to invest on the men's side to make them better. No, that's not what they're doing either.
Right.
So,
yeah.
What the fuck are they doing is a really good question.
Yeah.
Sunil.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move back into the Premier League for a couple more stories to keep pushing off talking about today's game. So, Manchester United has removed the interim title from Stellan Skarsgård's position as manager. He is now the full-time manager for United moving forward.
How could he not be?
Yeah, I mean, he's brought that team back from the brink. He's also great in Thor.
He was fantastic. What can you say? I mean, the only person that's disappointed here is obviously Kyle Martino, who understood for sure that Poch would be at United and that Eddie Howe would have led Tottenham to a league championship by now. But, no, he deserves this. He deserves this.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the right move. You've got them really now knocking on the door of a Champions League spot. They're sitting in fourth.
Not to undersell what they did the other night in Paris. With the amount of key players they had missing, and the amount of young players, and they fucking won.
Yeah.
To go to Paris 2-0 down. All right, we all know that Paris have got PSG and notorious for at that stage. But you went there, and you put, you know, you don't have Pogba, you've got a laundry list of injuries. And, you know, everyone, the commentators are banging on, oh, it's 20 years since that infamous night when, you know, Teddy Sherman and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer scored in Stockbridge trying to win. You know, you don't think Ole's not banging that drum in the dressing room?
Sure.
So he deserves the job. I mean, as a Tottenham fan, yeah, it takes away the Poch to Man United narrative.
Now, of course, as soon as that happened, the narrative in Real Madrid was their manager is going to be out within weeks, and of course, Poch is going there.
But it sounds like Mourinho's going there, yeah. So...
Also, the only thing that Poch has ever said super explicitly as manager of Spurs is, I will never be the Real Madrid manager, which is makes it hilarious that they continue to like spread this rumor. He's like, no, I'm an Espanol dude. Like, I would never go to Real Madrid my whole life. Like, which is just, like, it's just so stupid. It's just so fucking stupid.
It's clickbait and it's newspaper headlines. I mean, I said in the bar at halftime, the only one that... If you, and it's not a done deal with Mourinho at Real Madrid, but it just seems like the obvious move, because who else are they going to pick?
Right, yeah.
I don't think Thomas Tuchel is on the hot seat just yet at PSG, but given that Poch played for PSG, and I think that's where he ended his playing career, you know that narrative, Poch to PSG, is just bubbling under the surface, but I don't think Tuchel gets hooked just yet.
Can I pose a quick, interesting question, apropos of nothing, regarding...
If it delays talking about the Southampton game, have at it.
Regarding Real Madrid, when Zidane was there, the talk was... he couldn't get along with Bale, and that's why Bale's performance was what he was. And now Zidane's gone, he's been replaced, and now the scuttlebutt is Bale can't get along with this new manager. Is Bale the problem?
Possibly. Well, if he learnt the language, that might help.
Yeah, it is a very true statement to say that historically players from the British Isles have not done well when based in Europe.
Well, no, I think it's when they don't learn the language, and I can't. He's been there how many years, and he still hasn't learned fucking Spanish.
Well, to be fair, Welsh is very complicated.
You barely speak English, for Christ's sake. No, look, when Gary Lineker went to play for Barcelona in the mid-'80s, the first thing he did was learn Spanish. You have to learn, because how can you sit in the dressing room when the coach is giving his team talk and just be like, I haven't got a clue? You have to learn.
Hey, excuse me, when's the other version of the team talk?
You sit looking for context clues. He seems mad. Let's go with mad.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to the next story. So Newcastle had an interesting day today. They came back with a win. But they're under, I don't know, I don't want to say under fire, but Newcastle legend Peter Beardsley is mysteriously no longer with the team. He had been a member of their coaching staff for years, and suddenly the announcement is he's no longer on the staff with the club. This is likely because of an investigation that's been launched into claims of racism and bullying on his part against academy players.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the group Kick Out Racism, or Kick It Out, has expressed concern that the club won't confirm that the departure is related to the alleged incident.
Well,
if I'm the club, why would I? Honestly. Like, I took care of it internally. The dude was being like a racist dickhead to my teenagers that I have on staff. And I'm like, holy shit, get the fuck out of here. And then somebody goes, hold on, was that guy racist? I'm like, no, we fired him because he was late to work. Shut up. Like, you know.
But I mean, it's, you know, I think when it's an issue as large as this in that sport, I do kind of feel like the club should say, take the stand. Yeah. And say, yeah, you know what, there is a problem here, and we got rid of it.
Well, quote unquote, I mean, and it's again a typically British quote, Beardsley was on gardening leave for quite some time while they were investigating this. I mean, this...
his tulips are beautiful.
Yeah, though. Oh, yeah, well, he's had plenty of time.
Prize-winning orchids.
Yeah, but look, whether you're a former player, you have a job. You're in charge of the youth academy players. You have a responsibility to protect them. So if you're being racist and or bullying, you're not doing your job.
Right.
And also, here's the thing. For anybody that has ever been in even a semi-professional, or let's not even say semi-professional, let's say just competitive adult sports league, right? We all know that it's harsh, right? You have to perform or you fail.
It's a zero-sum game.
So to get a complaint of bullying, like when we say bullying, right, we don't mean just like being a dick. Right, because like that is almost the sine qua non of like what's happening at these academies. You have to be really harsh with these players because you have to be able to tell them you're never going to make it. You're not good enough.
Yeah.
So when it raises to a complaint,
unless you're at Real Madrid, where you're not allowed to criticize anybody,
exactly. Yeah. But unless it's got to be a really...
Oh, no, you can do it to the youth players. It's just when the senior players...
Oh, okay.
It's got to be a really special circumstance for someone to call it bullying and complain of, like, racist bullying, right? Like, you have to be... when being a dick is the norm behavior, You have to be especially a super fucking dick to get called out for this.
Well, and it should be noted that the player whose name, you know, is out there, I'm not going to use it, but the player who brought the charge against him is 22 years old.
Yeah.
It's not like this was an 11-year-old who was too sensitive.
Yeah.
This is a grown man who said, this guy's treating me like an animal.
Yeah.
You know, basically.
And I got the impression that there was more than one player.
Yes, complained. Right.
So that's, if it's one player, then you say, oh, boo-hoo, did mommy and daddy not give you enough love and attention? But when you've got multiple players coming out and saying, yeah, it's racist, it's bullying, you got to look at that.
And if you read the name of the player that they name in the complaint, you can kind of understand where, you know, it's likely there was a racist bent to it.
Well, and you start to get to these situations where it's like, okay, this podcast is not where we're going to solve fucking racism. But we're not? Okay, we will.
What am I trying to do here?
Let's do it right now. Here's the deal. Don't be fucking.
That's season three.
Yeah. Here,
Gordon Hotspur kicking out racism.
Here's the thing. Don't be fucking racist.
Yeah, just don't be
another
racist.
Another hot take from you, Jess.
Yeah, that was it. Hot take.
Well, in general, just don't be racist.
Don't be racist, and we like women every day.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
If you're going to be a fucking asshole, and you're that fucking biased that people start to notice, hey, see that guy who's an asshole? You ever notice he's only an asshole to brown people?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's got to be that obvious, you know what I mean? Because all these players are so scared of you and working so hard to please you as academy players. It's got to be, that's the thing, it's got to be extra obvious that you are a racist dickhead, like, for it to be called out by these academy players who need everything from you and have no power over you,
right,
for them to complain publicly about you, right? That's, come on.
No, that's the perfect point, is that the academy players are, they're victims. I mean, they're here, they need you. You are charged with caring not just for them in the moment, but this is their future you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, they need your blessing to become a professional, so. Anyway.
That said, what a win from Newcastle today. Miguel Almiron, come on MLS. It's all happening. All happening.
And finally, speaking of investigations being launched, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Man City is officially under investigation for financial fair play violations.
No.
Spoiler alert, they did it.
No. I
mean, now, other spoiler alert, they won't be punished.
No.
But and that's the thing. It's like, at a certain point, FIFA's going to have to face the music that it's obvious they're not serious about financial fair play.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they did all this to make a big show about it. It's so clear that they do not give a shit.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I was looking at the breakdown of what this implies and the punishments that can come. And one, and the ultimate punishment is to kick Man City, well, say Man City because it's them in this case, but to kick that team out of the Champions League. Could you imagine Man City getting kicked out of the Champions League? It's not going to happen. It's a great threat. It's like your father saying, yeah, if you don't get up them stairs, I'm going to whoop your ass. He probably won't. Some fathers do. But it's that threat, you know, and it's like, there's no way. So Man City beat Schalke on Tuesday or Wednesday. They're in the draw on Friday, and then Phil says, you know what, we're just going to take Man City out, and whoever they got drawn goes straight to the semis. What the fuck is going to happen?
It would be hilarious if they wait until the results of the first leg comes in. And then if City's ahead, they're like,
actually, no, you're out. Yeah, you're out.
At halftime, they sub off all of Man City and sub on Schalke.
Yeah.
Schalke comes out and there's just a pile of money blocking the goal.
Just Schalke like kicking the ball around for like 45 minutes and probably not scoring.
So I mean, you're right. It's comical to think that there's going to be any real results out of this, but they are being investigated.
Maybe
they pick up like a transfer ban for a window or two.
Yeah,
I think it's the fact that like it's just not a strong enough control on these teams. They have a lot of options if they really want to get serious about enforcing this.
Yeah,
they haven't taken any of them thus far.
But here's the old adage: there's no smoke without fire. And the fact that the story isn't going away, it's almost like they're saying to Man City, we're giving you every opportunity to do this right. If you persist in flaunting these rules that we vehemently stand by and don't enforce, we have no choice. And yeah, getting kicked out of the chair is never going to happen. But if you start taking other steps, then maybe the Man City of this world do have to say, you know what, maybe we do need to play by the rules because they're on to us.
Let me ask you guys this. It's one thing for FIFA to take that on an international level. Why don't the individual federations enforce it? I mean, why wouldn't the Premier League say it's better for business if everybody's on a competitive footing, so we don't want, you know, teams spending billions when other teams can only spend hundreds?
Because at this, as we sit here now, the live game in England, the 5:30 kickoff is Man City versus Watford. It don't kill the goose that lays the golden egg.
And it's
unfortunately, I'm not saying it's right,
right,
but
it's also about business structure. Remember that we're looking at this from an American perspective, where the league is this really strong force that has control over these teams. Remember, the Premier League is a very, very weak institution, the league itself. It's the clubs that have the power, right? And the Premier League is just sort of a constellation of clubs. It's not really a powerful institution.
Oh, I'm saying it's kind of, so it's more of a clusterfuck.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They can't really start pushing these teams around. And in fact, they're super dependent on teams staying in agreement with Premier League rules. And so when you get your heavy hitters going, no, we don't want to do that, pretty much their only option is to go, oh, okay, we're sorry. We didn't mean that. Here's the real question. What are they going to do? What is the legitimacy of the Premier League when they say, actually, Man City is penalized 10 points, or Man City is banned from winning the league, right?
Everyone's they're not celebrating in Merseyside.
Exactly, but it would be anarchy in England, right? Like, people would
City gets penalized, we'll get penalized. It's out of my hands.
Exactly. Like, at that point, it would basically be like Fulham would win the league, right? Like, Fulham would be the only team that, like, hasn't cheated in the last, like, 10 years.
But isn't that what you want? Like, isn't that what's best for the league? Is for Fulham to have a chance to win the league.
That's what financial fair play is set up for.
Exactly.
You don't spend more than you earn. And the fact that City have been, right, you can make a case for, well, they've been very creative in the laws, but you still broke them laws. What's the point of having them? You're not going to fucking, if every, in a 20-team league, and I'm not saying that every team does, it's just so obvious with Man City.
Sure.
I mean, it's almost like they've stuck both their middle fingers up to the authorities and said, yeah, fuck your financial. What are you going to do? Oh, you're going to kick us out of the Champions League? Ooh, what a threat. Ooh, we're scared. You've got to do something.
Well, and I think there are two competing philosophies, right? The overall dominant philosophy in American sports is that parity is what keeps people paying attention, right?
Greed is good.
Well, yeah. but the overall philosophy in American sports is if it's at least plausibly possible that a different team could win the title every year, that's what keeps people watching.
Right.
Right, that's it. The philosophy in world football tends to be a super domineering global brand is what sells tickets, right? And that's what's going to keep people paying attention. And so they would rather have a super popular global brand than they would have a league that has a different... The Premier League derives no benefit from Leicester winning, right? Like, Leicester wins, and oh wow, we can market it as this amazing fairy tale story. If the next year...
And then sack the coach season later.
But here's what I'm saying. If in 2017, West Ham would have won or some shit, right? The Premier League would
clearly be drinking way too much.
But the Premier League would clearly be shit, right? If they're like, oh, our shit teams can win at any time. It's almost like a worse look for the Premier League as opposed to like the NFL, where if the Indianapolis Colts win one year and then the Patriots win one year, the NFL's like, look at this, anybody can win any week, and it's all very exciting.
Right.
Versus like, if you're the Premier League and you have Leicester and then like West Ham and then like Fulham winning the league or something, you look shit. Right, so it's just a different dynamic they're going for. Are you shooting for parity, or are you shooting for our league has the most super global brands that everybody knows, right?
Yeah, I guess that's fair. And when you look at the history of the first division, a lot of the same names do pop up, Liverpool, United, etc.
Yeah.
Well, there's only been, I'm going to make it up, but I think in the...
However
many years the Premier League has been in existence, there's only been like 11 teams that have won, right?
Let's see, off the top of my head, Leeds, Man U, Arsenal,
Blackburn once,
Blackburn, Chelsea, City, Leicester. There's seven right there.
And that's close to it. There's probably some we're forgetting.
I might have overlooked one, but...
And Newcastle?
Nah.
Not in the earlier?
Nah.
No.
The old first division, way, in black and white, but...
Yeah, and that's... And so, but the point is, right, it is more profitable for, in the global game, to develop a super popular global brand than it is to have parity, right? If the only people watching your league are the people in your country, then you keep those people tuned in by saying anybody in any city could win,
yeah.
Right? If everyone in the world is watching country, then it's saying, recognize this name, buy these jerseys, buy this shit, you know?
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah.
All right, so that's going to wrap up news for the week.
So that's Economy 101, handled by Broad and Hotspur.
Let's move on to the two matches we played this week, and let's start with the Dortmund match.
And finish with the Dortmund match.
It's a more pleasant subject to
visit. Is that a smoke? Is that a fire alarm going
on? I think we gotta go. I think we have to leave. Sorry. It's for our safety. Yeah. It's for your safety, too.
No, we can't use that excuse. If you recall, we recorded an entire show while a smoke alarm was going off in a restaurant. That was like our longest show ever, too.
There is an active shooter inside this bar. He has just shot me. I am dead.
That could be true at any given moment in
this
country.
Philly, this pig's on you. I don't believe that. I'm surprised it hasn't happened before. Jesus Christ.
All right, so we traveled.
I'd shoot the bastards if I could get there.
Is the active shooter a Broad and Hotspur host?
Is the active shooter Jesse? Did he shoot himself?
To be honest, they won't give me a gun. I'm trying my best. It's America. They're just giving them away. They won't give them to me.
All right, so let's take a look at the match against Dortmund. Your current Bundesliga leaders were coming into this match down 3-0 on AG. We went and had to travel up to their yellow wall, whatever the name of that stadium is, and came out with a 1-0 win.
Good match.
Incredibly impressive, if you ask me. This is a Dortmund team that is 100% healthy now. Unlike the time, the first match where they had a couple of major injuries. They're totally healthy. They were at home, and they were desperate. And they were besieging us in the first half.
Yeah, they threw everything and the kitchen sink at us, which they had to. We knew that they were going to come out like that.
That's the thing. We only needed to be good enough in this match, and I think we were actually very good.
Yes,
we were.
That's the thing. The bar was really low for us to clear. Like, we could have allowed two and still, carried through.
Yeah.
But we played really, really well. And again, we talked about this last week. I don't know how much, or last time I was on the pod. We talked about this, but last time the pod was shitty. I don't know how much the players think about this in the dressing room in terms of if they really think in terms of different competitions. You know, do they really frame it differently? Or are they just saying, this is the last thing that happened and now we're doing this? But in the Champions League specifically, at least from a fan perspective, it appears we have so much momentum and we only needed to do okay, and then we did great. I just think this was such a solid... If you take from the second half of the first leg through this, the 135 minutes of football that we played, really, really exceptional.
Yeah, so... Totally dominant first half by Dortmund, and then we go into the half after Hugo has made, at that point, I think, 5 saves.
Yeah,
real game savers.
I kept joking about Hugo Lloris is the French resistance, because he clearly was in that game.
And then we come out after the half, and Harry gets us on the board immediately with a beautiful setup by Moussa Sissoko.
Yeah, what a ball from Moose.
I mean, that's probably the best pass Sissoko has had in his time in a Spurs shirt.
I think the assist he had on Lamella's goal, the header at the lungs, it was pretty impressive because he mugged, I think it was Felipe Anderson, and then crossed it. But that ball was waiting. The weight on it, the distribution, everything was spot on, and then Harry just one times it.
Yeah.
At that point, it's now they need 5. And I'm a Spurs fan, so I was going to say it's not happening. I mean, but now the chances of us going through were so much better.
So Hugo ends up stopping 7 shots in the match. I posed the question last week, if you recall, and Jess, if you listened.
I did, actually.
Good.
Somebody did, thankfully.
I posed the question last week, how important is a world-class keeper in the grand scheme of things? You know, can you win with a serviceable keeper and good defense? And Hugo showed us against Dortmund what a world-class keeper can do for you.
Yeah.
I mean, he was making unconventional saves.
Yeah.
What's true about football as opposed to, let's say, hockey, like another sport where you have a goalkeeper, is there are so many instances in football where, and you'll hear the announcer say it, the keeper had no chance, right? The keeper is only valid, like, on this marginal thing, right? There is this, okay, so if you, there's three groups of shots. There's this huge group of shots that keepers are expected to save.
Sure.
And then there's this somewhat smaller group of shots that keepers had no chance to save. And then there's this, like, little group in the middle, which are shots that good keepers save, but bad keepers don't, right? All the difference is in this group in the middle, right? All the difference is in that margin. And it's, you don't notice it until you really need it. And then somebody makes all the saves in that middle section, and you go, oh, shit, that's a good fucking keeper. That kept us in this game.
Yeah, I mean, of the seven saves he made, there were probably three that were diving off the fingertips that a lesser keeper lets go in. And if you give up three goals there in the first half, suddenly it's a real different situation coming out of halftime.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let me, I'm just curious for you guys. What's the difference? What is the difference between the Tottenham Hotspur Champions League sides that seem to be world beaters against the best teams in the world, and then a team that comes out and loses to Burnley, a team that comes out and loses to, let's be honest, an inferior Arsenal squad, and against a team that comes out and loses today? What's the difference? Is it, or is it just not getting as getting it up as much with the same players? Like, what is it to you guys?
I don't know, because I mean, if we knew that, we'd be fucking geniuses, wouldn't we?
Is it expectations? Is it pressure? When you go into Dortmund up 3-0, the expectations are you are not high. You know, no one's expecting you to come out and throw a great game together, but you do anyway. You're kind of expected to lose that match going into Dortmund.
It's not as though I feel like I see a weak mentality out of the squad that lost today, right?
No.
It was execution, yeah. it was not pulling it off. You know, we said at the end of the first half, we've dominated this whole match. I do still feel like we need two or three to be the winners. And obviously that proved to be upsettingly true. But, you know, I don't think it's just a mindset issue. Like, it feels like we just have, like, an entirely different class of play when we're in these different competitions. And I can't explain it. And it's disappointing, because what it reflects on is this idea that we have this mental weakness, right? Because if we are capable of that level of play in the Champions League, then we should be capable of that play every week. I think the most legitimate argument I hear is that this is just an exhausted squad that has no backup.
I think there's something to be said for that. But that said, you look at the changes that we made today. There were some fresh legs out there. You got Dyer coming back, Dele coming back, Lucas gets a start, Kyle Walker-Peters gets a start. So there were some fresher legs out there, and yet we just didn't exit. Now, the counter-argument to that is there's so many changes that it disrupts the chemistry.
Right.
But then we could get into a whole debate about that.
That chemistry is so complicated, and I would argue that we've actually won in spite of our chemistry in recent weeks, because, like, this is not a team that's played awesome together. We saw how much Dele had to add to the whole team play today. I mean, he brought so much to it.
And we'll talk about that in a second. Let's just wrap up this Champions League bit real quick. So we move through into the round of eight. So far joining us are Manchester United, as we mentioned, their huge comeback over PSG. Ajax knocking out the defending champions and doing it with style.
In style.
And then Porto taking out Roma, who then turns around and immediately fires their manager and hires Claudio Ranieri. As we discussed last week, Ranieri would not be out of a job for long. So
Roma's so funny. Roma's like Newcastle, where it doesn't matter if they're good or bad, their fans will show up and sell out every game. They love Roma so much. Like, it's a little bummer when Totti wasn't their only player for 18 years, but, like, they're so funny. I don't understand what's happening over in Roma.
And they're funny because their badge is a wolf, with two little wolves sucking on its tits.
Which we've covered.
Yes.
Which is also my badge. It's like my personal family badge. I knew nothing about Romulus and Remus. I just thought wolf sucking on tits was hot.
Let him who has not soon cast the first stone.
Steel family crest is something to see.
That's right.
So, in that Dortmund match, standout player, man of the match for me, it's Hugo.
Yeah, how could it not be?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you wanted to try to have a complicated conversation, you could say, wow, what a game Sissoko had.
Which you do, we say that every week.
Yeah, right, which is worth saying, but yeah, Hugo, man of the match.
Okay, so we move on. The draw is on the 15th.
Friday.
And everybody...
And we'll wait with bated breath to see if Man City are in here.
So everybody feeling good about yourselves right now? That was a good talk. Because you're about to feel a lot worse today. Defying all the thoughts in my head, we took on a Southampton team that, you know, had no chance to beat us. Guess what? There's always a chance. A 2-1 loss to a bad Southampton team that we thoroughly played off the pitch in the first half.
Yeah.
And thanks for joining us for another edition of Broad and Hotspur.
We're back in 3 weeks' time.
Yes.
Be good to yourselves. Glory, glory.
I mean, I could just end it right there.
If you're still listening, we're sorry, but we are going to talk about today.
Look, I said, going into the Burnley game, we're playing a team who are fighting for everything. Southampton were really unlucky last week to come away with nothing from Old Trafford. And, you know, they're just in a scrap right now. And they're going to fight for their lives because that's essentially what they're doing.
I think the biggest takeaway that we should have had today, which is...
Chinese.
Well, yeah, exactly. Chinese Indian, takeaway, Indian... Thai. All of it's available.
No one curry.
Yeah, yeah. You can do a good curry pretty cheap. Right here on South Street, a lot of good options. Visit philadelphia.com. I think that the biggest thing about today, we were so excited with Dele coming back. We looked so good in the first half.
We're so excited that Trippier wasn't starting right back.
And
Walker Peters looked great.
He was having a hell of a day, and we'll get into it. But I think we were all saying at halftime, it's going to take at least two to win this match. In this Premier League, in a Premier League where everybody has money, so everybody has talented players.
Apparently some have more money.
Right. A one-goal lead is not enough for any game.
Well, two wasn't enough for everyone.
Every team is capable of scoring, and every team is capable of scoring multiple goals if, you know, the bullshit goes right. And I would say this week, it was exactly that. We dominated this whole match. We probably had about a 15-minute spell in the second half where they were in the ascendancy. But either way, it was like their goals were against the run of play. We should have won it. We just fucking didn't. We just didn't do it.
Second half, talk about the proverbial game with two halves. I mean, I'd love to know what Hasselhoff said to them at halftime because they came out fired up.
We could probably tell you, but this isn't an explicit enough podcast. To cover that.
And
there are words I won't even say in public.
I don't know if he's German or Austrian, so it may lose a little in translation. But, no, clearly they
just
came out.
Scream Scheisen over and over again.
Yeah, clearly they came out fired up in the second half.
Yeah, what can you say? I mean, it just feels like, okay, the frustrating part, I said this before Kevin Ford came over to the table, Kevin and I were talking, and I said, it would feel so much easier right now if there was somebody or something to blame, if the ref had called a shit game, or if some player
had
been really...
Yeah, the ref had called that in our favor.
Right. Or if some player had been really bad on our side, or if some player had been a dickhead on their side, you know, you would really be like, oh, fuck, I'm really pissed off. But, like, we just weren't as good as a collective, and that's what stings the most here today, is we just lost this match. With no bullshit to point to and say that's bullshit, we just lost and fuck this. I mean, you can point to, on the positive side, I thought Walker Peters played a great match.
Great.
Aside from the fact that he did dodge a what could have been a red card when he intentionally tripped, what's his name?
Yeah, but he's not the last man. That was a bullshit call. He's not the last man, but it's never going to be a red.
No, you're right. He did definitely intentionally trip him, which is probably the right call to make, despite
the
fact that it worked out as a
foul.
Goal.
That's what you want. I mean, if you can't take the foul because it's far enough out.
Am I missing my timeline? Is that the one that resulted in the goal?
No.
Okay.
No.
And then, you know, I mean, look, he's not the only guy that that took a questionable foul, potentially. I mean, Yan kicks a guy in the face, kind of right on the outside of the box.
No way.
You've seen that get called.
You've seen it coming if he doesn't come through the ball on his way to get to his face. If they called that, I would have been losing my shit on this podcast.
So would I, but, you know, that's the kind of thing we've seen get called.
I mean, I have to wonder if the powers that be actually listen to this podcast, because after weeks of railing against referees and Jesus Christ, we're always up against the 12th man. We actually had a referee actually called it in our favour today. Calls that would have gotten the end. If that's fucking Mike Dean, that's Andre Mariner, that's Anthony Tye, that's probably a fucking penalty.
Right.
And then Kevin Friend just says, like, no.
Yeah, no, Kevin Friend, you know, if I can come up with anything today, Kevin Friend refereed a great match. Yeah, I mean, he really did. He let some stuff go, but he let it go both ways.
Yeah.
You know, he missed a couple of calls. Danny clearly dove and got himself a foul.
Yeah, he did. So let me ask a question. First of all, I'm going to attribute this to Jesus Perez, although I want to say we all saw on the cell phone, I think Posh was still running the show today.
Oh, absolutely.
But,
which very much a mockery of the touchline.
Right.
Yes.
But bringing on Llorente for Delhi at the time when we desperately needed a goal, and probably two, when Delhi was having a hell of a game. Are you really going to say Delhi's not fit enough to play the last 8 minutes?
He played 8 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, you know, if he's played 80, he can't play 90. That's my, yeah. You know, and does Llorente add anything? Because today the answer was no. That seemed very questionable to me when you desperately need a goal to pull Delhi for Llorente. That felt not like the wisest move.
Well, to me, what felt stranger than that, because look, I mean, I can see if your idea is, okay, well, we'll have Llorente pushing in there, we'll hope for a header. But then you take off Danny Rose for Ben Davies. And that didn't make any sense to me. I thought if you bring on Ben Davies in an effort to move Danny Rose to a more central position like he was last week, all right, that's something. But you're not improving your offense by bringing in Ben Davies there.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. You're chasing the game, there's 10 minutes left. It's your last roll of the dice. I mean, look, if that pans out, we're saying that's a genius move.
Absolutely.
It doesn't pan out, we question it.
It's also true to say, what were his other choices? And I think it's largely reflective of that we don't have a lot of choices at left and right back to bring in. And we don't have a lot of...
Wan-Bissaka.
Exactly. We don't have a lot of attacking reinforcements. I mean, you, as much as you want to say... Okay, regardless of what you want to say, as much as Poch has been a really quality coach, as much as we have really quality players who are all bought into the system and it's all going really well, it takes, especially when you're competing in multiple competitions, it takes about 16 to 18 first-team quality players to win the league when you're in multiple competitions.
Yeah.
It just does.
I mean, and Kev can attest.
And we have 12. We have 12 first-team quality players.
And Kev, you can attest that we've been talking about this since episode one of this show, is if you want to compete on four fronts, you need to have almost two full first teams. And we don't have that. We've never had that. And that's what makes things difficult on us.
And it's only forgivable at the striker level, because I recognize it's hard to recruit a second striker when you have the best first striker in the world. Because strikers are ego creatures, and when you know you will never start over Harry Kane, it's hard to recruit.
But there were times in the second half, I didn't even know if Harry was still on the park. Now, that's nothing to do with Harry, it's just there's no distribution, he wasn't getting the ball. Because I'm thinking, did we take Harry off? Because we weren't getting into the box.
Now, with the return of Delhi today, he really made a huge impact in the first half, freeing up Harry, freeing up Eriksen to do what he does. Something we've talked about in the past while he was hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, Jess, I know you brought it up that, you know, a lot of Eriksen's capability has to do with what, you know, what he's given by Delhi's play. They work really well together. And that's, again, why I don't understand the move to take him off in the second half, because you want to generate chaos. He's the guy that does it.
Well, and that's the thing. Eriksen's strength is his passing. It always has been and always will be. His control of putting the ball where he wants to put the ball off his foot is nothing short of amazing. It's great. Any other responsibilities he has decrease his quality of play. And so when he has to do more dribbling of the ball, when he has to have defensive responsibility, he's not going to be as good. And so having him be sort of released from those things by having other quality players that can be on that is really, really good, and freeing him up to play in his preferred role. You don't notice how much of a difference Dele makes in that, because the thing is, when Eriksen's the only guy that's capable, apparently, of distributing the ball in our squad, every team knows what to expect. They're going to move it through Eriksen out to somebody else, and so we'll shut it down once it gets to him, and that's it. Good deal. When you have Dele, who nobody, including, as Kevin said, as Kevin Ford said, not even Dele knows what he's going to do with the ball until he does with it. We're so much less predictable, we're so much more dynamic, so much more creative in the attack, which it looked like today, which is why it was just so fucking disappointing to lose this match.
Yeah. I mean, I misspoke on last week's podcast that I thought this international break was friendly. It's not. It's European Championship qualifiers. So now, looking at our squad, you know Hugo's getting called up for fuzz, and there's a very good chance Sissoko will get called up as well.
Sure.
As much as I rag on him, Trippier's probably getting called up for England. Danny Rose is getting called up for England. Jan and Toby are both getting called up for Belgium. I know for a fact Wainwright has been called up for Argentina, but Coco and Paolo Gazzaniga haven't. So those two guys stay behind. It's international break across the board. So Serge is probably getting called up for the Ivory Coast, and possibly Wanyama will get called up for Kenya. Moving into the middle, Dyer's now healthy. Dyer and Dele will both get called up for him. Winksy probably won't because he's injured. That might spare him. So that's three players we're not sending. Eriksen's getting called up for Denmark. Harry's getting called up for England. Sonny, you know, is getting called up for South Korea. Llorente won't get called up for Spain. There's four of our players that are staying behind. And no disrespect to Skippy, he's probably not getting called. So we've got about five squad players who won't get called up for international duty. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, you look at these international breaks, it's an opportunity for rest, and it turns out to just be a rest for us.
Well, and, you know, you look at taking Champions League out of it, obviously, because we don't know what our draw is going to be.
Or if City will be in it or not.
Exactly. You look at our run-in. We still have to play Liverpool, Palace, who are not a joke, but who are not great. City, and well, okay, that's it. We have to play Liverpool, Palace, and City, who are all okay. Everton's decent. We can beat Bournemouth. We can obviously beat Huddersfield. We can beat Brighton. So, you know, only City has, or excuse me, Liverpool has an easier run-in than us. I think at this point we're not talking about a title challenge anymore. We're talking about top four. But if you look at our run-in compared to Arsenal's run-in, like, we gotta win some matches. We gotta beat some fucking teams. Now, we can focus on Champions League, which I think we should, and I still think any team can win the Champions League this year.
Yeah.
Especially with last year's winner. Job opening. especially with last year's winner out. But, man, for the league this year, we gotta win. We can't coast in here. We've got a couple good teams that are really gonna beat us if we don't show up.
And 2 weeks ago, that didn't look to be the case.
We've taken 1 point out of the last 12 in the EPL.
And that's not Spurs. Any team couldn't survive that. That's bad. And I give more credence now than I did in the past to the narrative that at a certain point, if you don't have backup for your players, people just start getting exhausted. I listened to a certain other football podcast that focuses on the Premier League, and as a host on that podcast said, the Premier League season is designed to find you out.
Yes.
It is designed to say who can win over this long of a period.
And it's attrition. It's all about attrition.
Exactly.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
And we are showing that when you only have 12 first team quality players, you can't do it. You can't compete in this many competitions. You can't even compete in this one.
No.
Well, let's wrap this segment up real quickly by, I'm going to tee this one up for you, Jess, regarding something we were talking about right before the show started. This run of form, getting 1 point out of 12, this is the kind of thing that gets even our own fans using terms like Spursy.
That made me furious on the Philly Spurs Facebook page right after this match. Somebody posting about this is so Spursy. I was like, hey man, don't post this
shit.
Shut
the fuck up. Yeah, exactly.
Because like it's self-sabotaging. I thought you were going to bring this up to, and this is what's really important here, and honestly, we joke around a lot on Broughton Hotspur, but here's the thing. Sonny is not fucking.
No, Sonny yeah.
right now is just not fucking because his dad said not to. His dad said, don't fuck until you're married and don't get married until you finish your football career. And therefore, here's the thing. If Sonny could just bust a nut, like, I feel like he would be scoring a lot more goals. I feel like, here's the thing, like...
So can we hope that South Korea play their friendlies in June for Florida?
Exactly. If Sonny could just get one of them Bob Kraft hand jobs, I'm telling you, we'd be looking at a whole different... Is that what you wanted to talk about?
I mean, it wasn't, but now it is. And for the listeners who are wondering, no, I'm not going to do an impression of Sonny's mom. Absolutely not touching
apparently
that one.
Skype has broken down, and, yeah. we can't get
but
that.
But Danny's mom is inoffensive. We're not doing Sonny's mom.
This is just an extra little thing, only because today's match is too sad to talk about. The Guardian reported on, this week on the oh, not this week, on the 8th of March, which might have been this week. I don't know.
Friday.
Yesterday, actually.
Oh, it's last week, because the week starts on Saturday, so...
Sonny described his relationship with his father, saying that, one, his dad forced him into four-hour keepy-uppy sessions as a child.
Oh, my God.
And also that his dad told him, your wife must be your first priority when you're married. Therefore, you cannot marry till the end of your football career. And my big worry is Sonny fucking?
It's kind of both sweet and creepy at the same time. It's like, that's good marriage advice. Like, yes, your wife does need to be your whole world, but then to wrap it up with, so don't fuck while you play.
Now, because what loses, did he wink when he said that?
Exactly right.
No fucking while you're still a top one player.
He's like, listen, do a 4-hour keepy uppy, but if you can keepy it uppy for 10 minutes, you're good enough.
And we've all seen the pictures that end up on Instagram of like these, I guess, Korean girls who will travel far and wide to find out where Sonny's hotel is. Inevitably, some Spurs player will take them up to meet Sonny. You never know what happens after the camera turns off.
I really appreciate that you only attribute that to Korean girls and not 30-something white guys from Philadelphia. Thank you.
But, you know, you don't know what happens when the camera goes off. I always assumed that the door would close and then the sun would rise. But apparently, if Sonny is following what his daddy says, then maybe the sun also sets.
Well, you know how it goes. Sunrise, sunset.
So what you're saying is he's been
sunblocked. Oh, God, I'm done.
So his dad is sunblocking him. So what we're saying?
Sonny's dad applies the sunblock all across the UK.
In a hope that Sonny won't apply his sunblock all across the UK. Okay.
That works on a lot of levels. It's all really good.
And they're all gross.
Yeah.
Right, so...
And my skin would crawl even less if I wasn't sitting here with my South Korean red Sonny jersey on.
Yeah, by the way, I walked into the bar today and I saw Kev wearing red and I said, what the fuck?
That's why I wore it today and not for the Liverpool game.
When I was 13, my mom walked in on me after I had jerked off. She had missed the whole event and it was terribly embarrassing though because she was late. You know, she had come in and I was like, oh my God. And there was suntan lotion sitting on my bedside, and my mom was like, what the fuck? And I was like, oh, I have a rash. And then I was like, should I be using another lotion or what? That's what Sonny's been doing this whole time, except he's like, oh, should I be marrying these people? And his mom was like, no, and his dad was like, holy shit, stop fucking. Anyway, here's the thing about Sonny's dick. Are we still talking about this?
The biggest takeaway from this whole story is you jerk off with suntan lotion?
Well, I did when I was 13. I was trying to find all, I was experimenting. I was finding a way.
Your mom didn't have some skin so soft or Jergens?
I don't know what lotions my mom had.
Your mom didn't have those lotions that warm to the touch?
What I'm saying is, as a 13-year-old boy, the only lotion I felt I could justify buying at the grocery store was for suntan.
You thought PF 30 was prick force. Fair enough. You were 13. You were a child. You didn't know.
On the other side, he's never sunburned his prick.
It remains just really just pure.
Just lily white.
To be fair, my...
No.
I was about to say something that started with my wife, and then I valued my own life, and so I decided.
My wife.
My wife. That's the whole joke.
Jess, does your mom listen to this show?
Jesus Christ, no.
Does anyone listen to this show? Yeah.
Fair point.
Does your mom listen to this show? Yeah, she's among the three hosts who downloads it. Jesus Christ. This is just three guys in a bar.
It's all we are.
My mom thinks I work in a bank. Where are you, said it's on my bank branch opens on a Saturday. Jesus, what an inconvenience. And Sundays, yeah, sometimes we have to go in on a Sunday as well.
It's
we do an
bank
awful
podcast.
Yeah.
It's about interest rates.
Broad and investments. All right, so let's wrap it up there. There is no preview because we're taking a nice long break for the international break, and really, is it worth talking about Liverpool 3 weeks from now?
No.
Who knows?
Who knows?
All right, so that's going to be it. Let's go around the table with plugs. Kev, start us off.
I want to thank NBC Sportsnet for resurrecting Sky Sports News. When Fox Soccer Channel was in existence, it still exists now, but on a really reduced capacity, at 7 o'clock at night, you'd get the midnight Sky Sports News Live, which was great. You'd get the highlights, you'd get the analysis. It kind of sucks that it's 11 o'clock here, it's 4 in the afternoon, so it's pre-game. But you're still getting the ticker across the bottom, you're getting the league tables. I had no idea until this week. Leighton Orient, 3 points out of first place in the conference. They could go back up into the Football League. And without Sky Sports News on, I wouldn't have known that. I wouldn't have known that AFC Wimbledon were propping up League One. I always liked Sky Sports News. It's great that it's on. I mean, I've set my DVR for 11 o'clock for the next 2 weeks, so I can come home in the evening and then just watch that. Yeah, kudos to NBC Sportsnet for resurrecting that.
Just saw a film that I haven't seen. I think it's from 04 or 05. You guys seen The Damned United?
Yes.
About Leeds? What a film that is. What a movie. We saw it. It was just on some random TV channel. I don't know if it's on any of the...
It's on one of the streaming services. I think it might be on either Netflix or Amazon Prime. Because I flipped past it a couple of times.
Just watch it. Regardless of it's not a Spurs movie...
It's a great football movie.
What a football movie. And I've seen a lot of shit football movies.
Straight to victory.
Yeah, exactly. Dream, the goal begins. Santiago Munoz.
And the fact that they spun two fucking sequels for
exactly
that shit.
I think there was a play. Oh my god, yeah.
The Air Bud soccer movie.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a classic.
But if you haven't seen The Damned United, it's about the rise and fall. Well, not really the fall. Their movie ends before the fall of Leeds United. It's really about the rise of Leeds United and what. It's in context, it's really a cautionary tale for how far a team can fall. Because if you look at what happened to Leeds after that and what they represented before that, I mean, so you had this really a Leeds era, which was really the era after the Liverpool era, right?
Yeah.
You briefly had Spurs, and then you had this Liverpool era where Liverpool won everything, and then Liverpool fell off. And then there was a real Leeds era before Man United became a team in the Premier League, where Leeds were the dominant team, and now they're like nearly in, didn't they go into administration at some point?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Leeds has fallen so far. Anyway, if you haven't seen The Damned United, hell of a film. Really, really good movie. Would highly recommend it.
All right. And I've also got a recommendation from Netflix. My brother-in-law turned me on to this. I have termed this show to be like the ultimate lazy dad afternoon show. This is the kind of show that, you know, you're probably a white guy in your 40s can kick your feet up in the old easy chair and watch Longmire.
Heard of it, haven't seen it.
So it's a serialized show on Netflix. It lasted 6 seasons. It's about this sheriff in Wyoming who has to deal with, like, you know, all the things that go along with being a sheriff in Wyoming, but also happens to be adjacent to a Cheyenne reservation. There's a lot of interaction between the Native American population and the white population. It's a good show. It's like, it's Law and Order. You can turn it on, just let the procedural nonsense drift over you while you do something else, and then it ends, and it's completely inoffensive. So yeah, Lou Diamond Phillips is in the show, Peter Weller is in the show, Katie Sackhoff. It's got a really solid cast for a Netflix show that lasted 6 years. Yeah,
come on.
So a Netflix show that lasted 6 years. So definitely worth checking out if that is your cup of tea. It's kind of like a a less good version of Justified.
Okay.
So anyway,
Justified was good.
Justified was a great show. All right, so that's going to wrap things up from Founding Fathers, which is good. It's starting to get loud in here. We're going to take our break for the next 3 weeks. We'll be back right after the Liverpool match. We hope to talk to you then. But until that time, my name is Kevin. Joining me, as always, were
Sonny
and
Kevin.
And we'll see you in 3 weeks. Come on, you Spurs!
Come on, you Spurs! You Kevin!